behind every great beer is an even better story. Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. I've got a bit of an interesting story for you on this episode today. One from left field a bit. It's a story of craft beer passion and perseverance and just never, ever giving up. I'm tipping that if I mention the name Ben Miller to you, unless you're a big fan of the Inner West brewery and home brewing scene, many of you would just say, who? But remember that name, as this bloke is putting everything he has into taking his craft brewing dreams and turning them into a reality. He's just like every other home brewer with dreams of making it big. But maybe, just maybe, he's a little bit closer to fulfilling those dreams. He's been plugging away at all different sorts of strategies to improve his skills, widen his network, and get his beers in the hand of consumers. I thought it would be really interesting to get him on so that he could share some of his experiences, the mistakes he's made, and the wins he's had with those of you who share similar dreams of maybe one day taking that hobby of home brewing and going pro. So welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, Ben Miller.
There you go, mate.
Mate, I'd crack my can open here of my Captain Sensible by Bolter, but as you and I both know, this is our second time around tonight.
It is. Nothing like a trial run.
Forgot to press start, so, mate, this is going to be really polished.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get back to the start of this thing. It's fair to say that you have been well and truly bitten by that craft beer bug. When did this whole thing start for you?
Mate, it was it's a bit hard for me to say exactly. It was sort of when I moved to Australia, or when I moved to Sydney, sorry, back in 2008, I started, just the Cooper's homebrew kits, as everyone does, and I've always been quite interested in the way you sort of beer's been brewed and all that, but it really got a lot of growth for me was going back to New Zealand, and I sort of met up with a few mates over there, and we used to just go to a couple of little craft beer bars in Wellington, like back in the early days of Little Beer Quarter and all that sort of stuff, and we would buy each other rounds of different beers and try them and discuss them like we knew what we were talking about and enjoyed them. But, really sort of ramped off from there.
And probably not a bad place to start your journey into craft beer, old Wellington. Plenty of good bars and breweries around there.
Yep, definitely. It wasn't as big. Wasn't as big back then. That was sort of – I moved out of Wellington in 2007, but I remember as far back as I must have been about 16. One of my dad's mates, I'll never forget, he sort of just gave me a little try of – I'm pretty sure it was a Tuatara beer back then. And that was a very interesting experience for me. It was, I guess, like a lot of people that I now give beers to that have never tried beers, and they go, it's just this massive explosion of flavor. And it was a lot to take on for a 16-year-old, that's for sure.
A bit different to the DB drafts you've been stealing out of your old man's fridge, I suppose.
And the dirty tui. Like as a kid, I stole a beer once, and I thought he wouldn't know if I filled it back up with water and recapped it. Dad's come back from a day's work and gone, I'll grab a nice cold one, and popped it and gone to take a sip. He's taken some water and, different.
That reminds me of a story when I was a kid, probably around the 18 years old, and my family are Ukrainian, and my grandfather used to make this stuff called Slivovitz, which was pretty much triple distilled, like a vodka made out of pears, I think it was. And I one day went to this party, and we had like one flagon of the Slivovitz left, and it was on Mum and Dad's blackwood chest where it was kept, so us kids couldn't get at it. I went in there and stole some of it, but spilled it all over the top of the chest and didn't worry about cleaning it up, and it stripped all the varnish off the top of the chest, and I had to lie to my press. Don't know what happened.
Wow, isn't that interesting? That's something you drink will just strip the paint off.
What was it doing to my guts then? I don't know.
Mate,
I tend to digress on these things, so let's get back to you and what you've been up to. Like, so you obviously been bitten by this craft beer bug, and then the next step obviously for you was home brewing. And once you really started to get serious about that, you jumped in with both feet, didn't you?
I did, mate. Yeah, it was it sort of was one of those things where I went from, like I say, the Cooper's kits, and I met up with a mate of mine from New Zealand, who lived out Bathurst way, with another friend, came over to visit for the weekend. So we shot out there and met him. And that was sort of, we knew a little bit about brewing then, but to see what he was making and to taste it and go, no way, you made that at home. And, you know, he sort of he explained the process of us. So I'll never forget, we got back in the car and raced back into Sydney from Bathurst so we can make it to the homebrew shop in time. And now, there it all started. That was the start of the – well, that was a partial mash brew then, but it was all the start of adding mental amounts of hops to things and never following a recipe. So,
and what was the kit like initially? Was it a borrowed keg from a line or a CUB or the pot in the stove? Or
my first ever kit was an 11-litre Kmart pot, stainless steel. Was like a – I don't know. I've still got camping it actually. I use it all the time. I use it for making big soups and stuff now. I actually even use it for making big starters sometimes still. But, it's 11-litre Kmart pot. Did that and with the liquid mold extract and did my full boil in that and then just diluted it back down with water to try and cool it after being in an ice bath for ages. And it's cool. It's quite funny to see how it's sort of progressed.
And who are you going to for advice at that stage?
At that stage, the internet, books, all that sort of stuff. I, until later on when I sort of got into the commercial side of things, I actually didn't have any help at all. I never followed recipes. I just always wanted to make a beer that I wanted to make, and that was sort of how it rolled, how it still rolls for me now.
Not a big fan of the BJCP guidelines?
Oh, it's not that I'm not a big fan of them. I've just never... like I say, I've never entered competitions, anything like that, purely for that fact that I've never followed. I think if I brewed to that, I wouldn't be able to do what I do today. So it's kind of, You know what I mean? It's each to their own, I guess.
So in the pro world, who do you look to as being, someone you look up to? Is it someone like a Topher at Wildflower, maybe a McKellar or someone along those lines?
Yeah, all those guys. I mean, Topher's what he's done recently is awesome. I love going down to Wildflower and having a beer and chilling out all the barrels around you. It's like being in America or something. It's quite cool. He obviously wasn't around when I first started my brewing, but it's good to see all that growing. But things like McKellar, all of those sort of places have just like they, I remember just looking at them going, wow, that's next level, you know.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast. In the words of Transvision Vamp, I don't want your money, honey. I want your love. I'm not going to ask for a Patreon donation because that's not really why I do this. I just want you to help me spread the craft beer gospel. Whichever podcast service you use, if you like my interviews, please like, subscribe, follow, rate, and share my podcast with your friends. It all helps to spread the craft beer message throughout the community, and in turn, hopefully can help those of you out there who make a living working in the industry. That's all. I'll let you get back to the podcast. And sort of by this time when you're sort of really getting serious with things, you were obviously circulating in the pointy end of the home brewing community, both online and in the real world. Were there other guys around you who are helping, who maybe went on to become pro brewers or something like that?
Yep, that's actually where the whole pro thing started for me was obviously through home brewing, but it was actually going to homebrew meetups in Marrickville at the Hop and Grain Brew Store. They used to have a bring a brew night once a month, I think it was, from memory, every Friday night. I couldn't even tell you how many I went to, and I often used to fall asleep on the train at the end of the night and miss my stop. But so they were good nights. But I met a guy down there called Jay Cook, and every brew meeting we sort of shared our own beers and kind of got our own little corner and stuff like that. But he introduced me to Bucket Boys. Asked me, he said, there's this store that's going to be opening up soon called Bucket Boys. They're going to be a craft beer store and they're going to have their own line of beers. You know, they've asked me to brew for them. Do you want to come and help me brew? And it was sort of, that's where it all just shot off from there, really.
So, mate, you obviously were producing some good beers because people would recognise that fact. Why weren't you snapped up by one of those breweries in the inner west? Was it just because you wanted to do your own thing?
Yeah. I never really put myself out there to be snapped up, I suppose. There was always the money factor of things too, you know, being a truck driver, that's sort of my main income. So I had to balance up with, you know, what I love doing and all of that. But, Bucket Boys was a good introduction to brewing commercially and seeing the sort of, I guess the look on people's faces and how much they love something you produced was really neat for me to see that. And that sort of got me more and more into it. And then, I got involved in brewing with Akasha and it all went crazy from there.
Let me take you back to the Bucket Boys for 1 second. Did you see that look of joy, et cetera, on the punters' faces with your first commercial brew for Bucket Boys?
Yeah, we did actually. One of the, I think the first commercial brews we did were just a couple of pale ales for like Bucket Boys.
I was trying to bait you because didn't one of your brews fail there early on?
Okay. Now this is my own stuff. Yeah, through Bucket Boys. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll get to that. Don't worry. That's a good story.
Okay, so everything started off smoothly. We'll get to that later. And then the next step was obviously with Dave Padden at Akasha.
Yeah, that was a funny one, actually. That was I had been following sort of Dave and Akasha's movements for a while, just like, oh, these new brewery going to start up. It'd be pretty cool. I heard, you know, Riverside, he's come from there and come over and all that sort of stuff. So I actually went down there. I chatted to Dave a little bit on Facebook Messenger, but, you know, just being a home brewer talking to a commercial brewer, just, you know, asking him little bits of advice and stuff like that. And I ended up meeting Dave at their, I think it was Akasha's first birthday. I met them. And okay. I got chatting to him and I sort of went, oh, you know, like I think I bought some of my beers down, maybe, perhaps. Gave him some of my beers.
Yep.
And he was sort of, you know, he was really enjoying them and drinking them. And I said to him, I said, hey, look, I happened to be in between truck driving jobs. I had 2 weeks off before I started my new job. And I said to him, hey, look, I'm sure you get asked this every day, but, you know, would I be able to come down and do some work experience? And I think it was, I still to this day, I don't really know, probably the worst thing that ever happened to him, have me in his life. But yeah, I think he enjoyed my beers and he gave me a chance. And it went from there, and I ended up, yeah, that was that new truck driver job didn't last as a full-time job very long. And I ended up working there for about a year for free, actually. It was just on my own. They didn't need staff. They didn't need me. Dave, I think, must have seen the passion I had. And, just went from that, juggled between driving a truck and brewing beer. So it was pretty cool.
So was it more about, like, say, with Akasha and Bucket Boys, was it more about just getting a body to do work, or were they taking you on because they knew you had, you know, some real brewing chops behind you?
Yeah, I think that was so Bucket Boys, the thing was obviously with Jay, he asked me he needed some help brewing, so that was just he already knew that what I brewed and trusted, obviously we trust each other with the brewing processes, so that's sort of how that worked out. And that was at that point in time, that was me just brewing just Bucket Boys from Bend didn't exist then. And then the Dave, the Akasha thing, I think that was, like I say, I think that was more on, probably I was quite relatable to Dave and, how we both sort of our journey through, you know, progressing through home brewing was quite similar in the sense that, you know, we never brewed to save money and, you know, we both love hop forward beers and probably processes. I sort of understood the way they work. So it was, either way I look at it, whether I was needed or he just saw something in me, I just think I was so lucky to be able to have an opportunity like that because it's really sort of, you know, I got to learn off probably one of the more knowledgeable brewers in Australia. So
yeah,
very good.
During that time, did it ever sort of cross your mind to maybe go and do some of the brewing courses available or maybe become a Cicerone to help sort of make your career go further more quickly, I suppose?
Yeah, a lot of the stuff that I did leading up to that point was, like I say, quite like I sort of learned it all myself. There would definitely be benefits to doing courses like that. The biggest downside for me is that being a Kiwi, it's really expensive for me to do that TAFE course, so I can't get in through anything like that. So it's about, I think from memory, so I did a diploma of building and construction years ago and it cost me like $7,000, whereas if you're an Australian, it was about $500 or $1,000 or something. It was nothing. So it would be similar for me now being a Kiwi. I'd have to pay, and you have to pay it up front too. You can't have any, you know, so.
Yep.
Yeah, that's been the big thing for me. Yeah. But look, I am anything I can do to cram my brain full of learning is I'm there. You know what I mean? Like the new IPA book, Scott Janish, all that sort of stuff is I read through it and pretend like I know what it's talking about. But
And then let's move on to From Ben. How long have you been running with that the brand for?
From Ben is about a year. Started actually the launch. of From Ben, which is this is where we're going with it, was Danish Silencer. Yeah. And that was on my that was on my birthday on February 22nd in 2017.
The infamous beer, I should say.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah. So that was, we all, everyone listening to this is probably, they would have known the story behind it. It was a hazy double IPA that I'd been working on forever. I'd brewed countless batches of it at home. It was gaining a lot of traction online. You know, I had people asking if they'd come to my house to pick it up and to get some off me. And I'm all for that. Yeah, sure, come grab a squealer of it, whatever. You know, I love that stuff. That's why I brew beers, so people can try what I create, you know. And so Jonathan from Bucket Boys sort of said, hey, why don't we, you know, let's work on this. Let's help you start your own label. Let's go From Ben, and it can sort of be a side off Bucket Boys, and we'll get this Danish Silencer out there. And it was so highly talked. It was, I put just so much passion into it. It was, you know, at that point in my life, it consumed everything I was doing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we had some oxygen ingress somewhere along the line, and the whole batch was probably to this day still the most oxidized beer I've ever seen in my life. So,
oh no!
But, it was. We're still not exactly sure where it came in, but all we know is that it didn't last very long at all, unfortunately. And that was a shame, you know. Like Bucket Boys sold out of their stock in, I think, 12 minutes or something like that. It was mental. There was a 4-pack per person limit. It was just so crazy busy to go from such a high to such a low. It put a real big dampener on sort of my feel for it, I think. Yeah.
But you've bounced back because you've got this regular tap at the Rusty Penny in Penrith. For other prosumer home brewers out there, I'm sure they'd love to know how you got that tap and what type of commitment you have to have ongoing to keep the beer flowing with them.
Yeah, look, Rusty Penny thing was, again, came through Jonathan actually from Bucket Boys introduced me to them.
This industry is all about relationships, isn't it?
It is, definitely is. And, you know, and even the whole thing with Akasha helped me out too, you know, like just knowing them has got me very, very far, and being quite good friends with Dave still has got me very far in the industry. So that's definitely a really important thing. But, yeah, well, I just got introduced to them, and they sort of offered me the opportunity to have a beer on tap there, as they just had an empty tap. So, you know, just get to it's nice to have a place to base myself, you know, and those people that message me and ask me where they can find my beer, it's nice to actually have a regular tap now where I can serve them a beer. And it's just one of those things again, like, you know, to gain traction in an industry that you really want to be in, especially one like this, I think it's really important to know that you've got to put a lot of unpaid hours into it, and it, you know, it might not always sort of agree with your work schedule or anything like that, but it's just all about trying to balance around it. And if you've got to work for free to get a foot in the door, then you've got to work for free to get a foot in the door. At the end of the day, it all comes down to what your passion is and where you want to head with it, and knowing that being a commercial brewer is, you know, awesome fun. It's cool, but you know, you are a 90% a cleaner. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So what do you roll through that one tap? Is that like a keg a week of something different, or?
They've got just a little system out there. So I just do 200-liter batches at a time, which is perfect.
Oh,
so,
you brew on their equipment?
Yeah,
do you?
Yeah, I brew their everything. Right. So everything's in house there. So it works out really well for me. Yep, I don't have to go far it's perfect. It's really, really good, and it's one of those opportunities that you. People, you know, you'd die for something like that. It's so good.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. The boys at Rusty Penny have, you know, I don't even think they understand how much of a big opportunity that is for someone like me. But, I brew there. I can get 3 to 4 kegs out, depends. At the moment, I've been brewing. The first batch I had there was Tenapai, which is my New Zealand hopped hazy pale ale.
Yep.
That was, I actually used Voyager malts in it this time, as opposed to a combination of Barrett Burston and Gladfield, but yep. Used mainly Voyager malts, and that's come out really good. I've got a Schwartz beer in the tank at the moment for Oktoberfest there.
Oh yeah, cool.
And then I'll go back to doing another batch of Tenapai, and then after that I'll roll on something new coming into summer. We might do a fun, crazy fruited gozer or something like that. But yeah.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Now, you've done other work with brewers recently as well, haven't you? And I am talking about the romantic trip through South Australia you took with your girlfriend and just so happened to end up at Barossa Valley Brewing Company to brew a sour beer with them. How the hell did that happen?
Just me being me and having a chat, really. It was actually it was funny. Yeah, I surprised my partner Janice with a trip down there and ended up proposing to her on that trip. But I was just having a beer down at Barossa Valley Brewing, and Denham, the owner, he saw my T-shirt and goes, "Oh, that's that Sydney-based person, isn't it?" I said, I just got talking to him, played dumb for a little bit.
I was wearing my own T-shirt,
and it was for me. I was sort of living in the he recognizes my logo, you know, but living in that, and then I ended up telling I was Ben, you know, and he was like, he sort of went off from there, and then we got talking, and later on that year, late last year, I flew. Was it this year? I can't remember now. But yeah, flew down for did a collaboration brew with them. We did a raspberry and guava goza, which was in cans, and then we did a collaboration. So it was a Barossa Valley Bucket Boys, Barossa Valley from Ben.
Yep.
My one was a raspberry and guava, and their one was passion and mango. So and they've both been pretty well received. You had a couple of them. So.
Yeah, they were great. Yeah, I love the idea of being able to mix them at different portions and that sort of thing. It was really cool, actually. Good idea.
Yeah, well, that came from because we've done a lot of those gozers at home, but at home you can go mental with fruit. Like, you know, 50 litres, you're putting 10 kilos of purees in and stuff like that, which is awesome, but not really very viable on a, you know. But that was half the fun of them was blending them together was, you know, we had a I think at one point I had a raspberry free joa and guava one and a blackberry and boysenberry one. And separately, they're obviously completely different flavors and blend them together and you ended up with a whole new beer. So that was what we pitched this idea to Denham down there and he loved it. So we went, well, let's do a collaboration. And I think the more interactive beer can be and the more you include the drinkers is sort of – the cooler and the funner it becomes, you know what I mean? So that was how it worked out really well. Was the reviews all over Untappd are awesome. I don't think we've had any bad ones really at all. So that's really cool, especially with a beer like that. Like, it's risky packaging beer like that with as much fruit and as we put that. Each beer has 300 kilos of puree in it. So
shit.
Yeah. A lot of puree.
Yeah, bloody yeah. So when you're not brewing at the Rusty Penny or with another brewer, what's your homebrew kit look like these days?
I've been lucky enough to one of my friends, Brett. He's gone in halves with me pretty much on a big SS BrewTech system.
Nice.
We've got it's a 110 liter hot liquor tank with the two 20 gallon mash tun, the 20 gallon kettle.
Beautiful.
It's an electric hot liquor tank, gas-fired kettle, so we can punch out a maximum about 80 litres per batch. We've got one 17-gallon uni tank, two 14-gallon Chronicle fermenters, one 17-gallon Chronicle fermenter, and two brew buckets, and they're all hooked up on glycol.
Very nice, very nice. You're making a lot of the homebrewers listening to this right now getting very jealous of you, I think.
That's kind of one of those things, you know. It's if you're going to do it, I'm sort of all for go a bit crazy. I mean, I used to race sprint cars, so this is a lot cheaper than that. So either way you look at it.
If you're going to get a dog, get a big dog.
Well, I went and see it. Though you say that, I've got two beagles. They're mid-sized dogs. No,
that's embarrassing.
it's good, mate. It's nice to – I enjoy it. I run around the garage pretty much like a commercial brewery. You know, we inject O2 into our wort and all sorts of stuff. So,
oh, cool.
I love it.
Yeah, nice one. And you mentioned to me this week that I think tonight even you'll be bottling a barrel-aged stout. Is that for love or money?
That's very much for the love of it. They're expensive beers to brew, but it's one there's a bit of a story behind that. It's I'll give you the long and the short is my mate Brett, the guy that owns half the system in our garage. He had a bit of a operation he had to have done, but he only had about a 50-50% chance of living or surviving.
Oh shit!
So I said he didn't brew at this stage. I sort of said to him, "All right, well." I'll make the beer that you want. You know, you just tell me what you want and I'll make it. And we called it Letter Warm because he's known for every bottle share we ever had, he'd be going around telling everyone they're drinking their beer too fast. You know, settle down, let it warm up, you know. So anyway, we done a whiskey barrel aged, whiskey oak aged at that point, Imperial Stout called Letter Warm. The first year was French oak and New Zealand double ordered whiskey. The second year was American oak with Starwood whiskey. And this year we actually got some barrels in from Journeyman Bourbon in America and we filled it up. With that, and it sat in the barrel for 7 months for a first use bourbon barrel. So it'll be we'll be bottling that up as soon as we're done here. We'll be straight in the garage and get it all done and get it out to all the blokes who have been getting it every year. So
nice. Yeah. What's the ABV on that one?
12.5 this year.
12.5. That's a big fucking beer.
Yeah. Well, last year was 14 actually. So
shit.
Yeah. I love it. That's the only way to do a stout, mate.
Now, mate, so what about the future for you? Like, are you sort of always going to have a foot in both camps in terms of your truck driving career and your craft beer career, or maybe you've got, you know, bigger plans to do something else?
Look, I've definitely got big plans. The ideal for me would be have a nice brew pub somewhere where I can sort of express everything that I love and you know, give people a place to hang out and call their local and they can go there for good food and good beer and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I love the pub model. It's great, I reckon.
I think it's just I always enjoy going to places like that. You know, I always feel I could sit there all day and just talk, you know what I mean? That's what I want because, as I said, my passion doesn't just flow through beer. I love good wine. I love good food and all that sort of stuff. So if I have a place where I can really, you know, get that out there and I can sit back and, like I said before, just watch people enjoy what I've put my passion into. That's what I really want out of this. So location wise, I'm not sure yet. My partner and I, after we get married in February, so we'll probably be moving on out of Sydney around that time. As to where we're going, we're not sure. But yeah, in future, there'll be definitely a little From Ben brew pub out there.
Sounds cool. And as I said before, look, I do have a lot of home brewers that take an interest in the stuff that I do, especially the podcast. So there'll be plenty of them out there tonight thinking, oh, I'm so jealous of Ben. I'd love to be doing what he's doing. What kind of advice can you give them if they're thinking about taking a similar route to you?
Just one of those things, I think. You know, if you want it, go get it. Just try and just do what you can to get where you need to be. If it means juggling a full-time job or, you know, it's never going to come to you. A lot of people sort of think, oh, I know how to brew now. I'll walk into, you know, it's never going to come to you like that. You have to really push for it. But whether, you know, you push for a year and it doesn't work, or you push for a year and it does work, or you got to keep going or whatever. The end result, if it's what you want to do, it's what you want to do, and you do what you can to get there, you know. It's
fair enough.
Yeah,
don't stop till you get enough.
No, that's
Michael Jackson, was it?
Yeah.
All right, mate. It's been wonderful talking to you tonight. It's just great to hear a bit of a different story from, you know, someone who's so passionate around craft beer and just doing everything they can to try and make a go for it in the industry, which can be tough to break into. I think you're a bit like the little engine that could, perhaps. I don't know. Do they have that story in New Zealand?
I think so. Yeah. I know it, so I must know it from somewhere.
Yeah. Mate, what do you reckon? Do you think you're up for the Fast Five tonight?
Oh, we'll give it a go.
All right, mate. Ben Miller, your time starts now. Has beer ever led you astray, and can you tell me about it?
I don't know if I can tell you about it, but I think every time I have a good session, I end up somewhere I wasn't meant to be. So.
And nude. No, yes. Fair enough. Okay. Your words.
Maybe, sometimes.
Who's the most famous person you've shared a beer with?
Probably Rhiannon Fish, that girl off Home and Away, I think. It's pretty sad.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, good one, mate. Okay. What has beer done for you that nothing else has in your life?
Introduced me to a hugely diverse group of people, and I love it.
Awesome. What's the best beer experience you've ever enjoyed?
Look, I'm sure there'd be more along the way, but at this point it's probably being out the back of Rare Barrel in San Francisco with a pair of pliers and a spray bottle and pulling out whatever nail I wanted to and trying beers out of the barrels out there. That was pretty cool. That was neat.
Lovely stuff. And what's the most important thing you've learnt in your craft beer journey to date?
Whether your beer's oxidized or not, just make sure you have fun.
Nice. I like it. And number six, do you know Chris Hemsworth? Can you help me get him on the podcast?
I've been thinking about this one. Why don't we brew a beer called Calling Chris Hemsworth and see if he gets it, and see if it gets his attention?
I like it. I like it. It's probably about the best idea I've had so far, I reckon, because so far I am 0 for about 50 in terms of getting him on the podcast by one of my guests. So sometimes you've got to think out of the
box. We can always try it. Beer brings everyone together at the end of the day, mate, so you can always try with it.
Yes, it does. I agree with you. Well, mate, thanks again for joining me tonight. This has been fantastic. It's been a great story. And, look, mate, I wish you well for the future. Look forward to seeing what happens with From Ben, and hopefully there'll be a nice little brew pub for you there somewhere along the way, and it'll be a very successful little one if your other beers are anything to go by. So good on you, mate, and thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Cheers, mate. Thanks for tuning in to another Beer Healer interview. I really hope you guys enjoyed the episode as much as I did. If you want to follow along with more Beer Healer content, you can check out my Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram pages. Just search Beer Healer, or you can visit beerhealer.com. If you like the podcast, can you please help me spread the word by subscribing and rating it and sharing it with your beer-loving friends?